There's a specific question that I refuse to answer. A question I get privately from members of the Limitless audience from time to time. How much money do I make doing what I do? Here's why I refuse to answer this question. I have no desire to dilute my field by producing a swarm of pseudo-experts who would, no doubt, awkwardly and melodramatically end up competing with me. The only reason to talk about my income would be if I wanted to sell you a course on how to get rich quick as an applied neuroscience strategist like me. But even if I created the greatest course on the planet about launching a lucrative career as a health or personal growth influencer, the data is pretty clear. 80 to 90% of my students would fail to achieve even moderate success simply because entrepreneurship is just that hard. The fact that I've never released such a course should make you think some. We live in an era of endless digital pitches, gurus and influencers selling masterclasses and blueprints for day trading, crypto investing, or building some kind of automated AI empire. But the big question you should ask faced with these sort of opportunities is this: why? If their niche is as profitable as the marketing claims, why are they spending their time selling you the map instead of just mining the gold themselves? I don't sell Secrets of Smart Drug Dealing on the Internet as a course because I'd much rather spend my time and energy doing the actual work that provides for my family. And I hope that you can carry that same nugget of critical thinking with you next time you see a four-figure price tag on some sort of profit machine that is pitched. Because the moment you stop questioning critically is the moment that your human firewall begins to crumble. I'm Jonathan Rosent with Limitless, and today I am talking with Robert Siciliano, and he is going to be leading us deeper into this world of deception and the defense that you need against it. And he's a man that has gone to the extremes to prove these kind of points. Once apparently even buying an ATM on Craigslist just to demonstrate how easily our secure systems can be cracked. And he is a writer, a security analyst, and the architect of the strategic human firewall. His expertise has been featured on CNN, Fox News, CNBC, along with in the Wall Street Journal and Forbes. While he's a world-class educator for corporate giants, today he's joining us to help us harden our personal defenses. Robert, welcome to Limitless.
Thank you, Jonathan. Very happy to be here.
Okay, so first question, and this is going to be a somewhat salacious question, okay? Years ago, I stumbled upon the website of Andrew and Tristan Tate, and they were selling this $2,000 plus course on how to reap massive profits doing what they did, managing webcam girls and women who sell their bodies on OnlyFans. And I found this morally despicable, but it kind of made me scratch my head as an entrepreneur. Their business was fundamentally predatory and deceptive. They duped multitudes of desperate men around the world into sending them money, and they duped dozens of women into taking off their clothes online for only like a 25% cut of that money. And then they duped millions more men around the world into buying into their rebrand as pseudo-conservative traditionalist influencers. And it all happened on the internet. And the internet has made it, I contend, has made it easier than ever to sniff out scams and shams. On YouTube, you can find endless videos telling similar stories of how formulaic pig butchering and romance scams are run. On the internet, you can look up the background of any guru. On the internet, you can look up reviews in moments of almost any company you're considering buying something from. The internet should make us more informed and less vulnerable to predators. The internet should have given us a more meritocratic form of capitalism where bad actors went out of business. But it seems that the opposite is true. Common sense is rarer than ever these days, and scammers profit, victims multiply. So here's my question. Here's the question at the end of that. Why has the internet made even smart people more vulnerable than ever?
It really boils down to our biology, right? Humans possess what I call the human blind spot. And the human blind spot is our, as humans, our biological and psychological want and need to trust others. We trust by default, you know? And as what is considered an interdependent species is what we are interdependent upon each other. Man requires woman, woman requires man fundamentally to procreate, to further the species. And the basis of that is that we need to trust each other. Okay. And so throughout the day, week, month, year, we give the benefit of the doubt all day, every day, both in person and virtually. So everything or everyone that you generally communicate with on a regular basis, you have a want and a need to trust that they have your best interest in mind, that they don't mean to hurt or harm you or I. So going into each interaction, trust is our default. And so when somebody says or does something that we look at as being, oh, that's interesting, that seems good to me, we go into it with giving them, you know, this trust that we possess biologically and psychologically, right? And so when someone has a story that seems probable, looks good to me, would benefit me, interests me, we go into it with open eyes, welcoming. And that goes with, you know, pretty much most, if not every conversation we have, everything that we consume. And scammers know this. Bad actors know this. Those profit-minded that know that ultimately what they're selling is snake oil know this. And we can't escape that, right? It's always has been, is, and always will be like that. It's up to you and I to be able to discern ultimately, right? You and I, everyone, needs to become, you know, a thinking person outside of what we're currently consuming, you know? We need to be able to look at every aspect of what it is that this inbound information, the email, text, phone call, pop-up, video, article, like what is really going on here? What is its motivation? What is it trying to get? What is it truly trying to accomplish? And is it truly truthful. And I don't know that most people are discerning the way that they should or could.
So some people would say that the solution to this is just to become dramatically cynical and skeptical about categorically, but that also seems like that would kind of be an error. So is there we talk a lot about like gut intuition. What would your suggestions be to better hone that discernment? Is it as simple as like just listening to a bunch of podcasts about the different kind of scams that are out there, and then the red flags become a whole lot more obvious when we're just as a result of being informed? Or are there some neuroscience grounded strategies for like greater discernment that generalizes?
This is a great conversation, Jonathan, by the way. Thank you. Okay, so a few things. Getting back to the human blind spot, right? It's important that we, as, you know, mammals, understand what makes us tick, what makes us choose, what makes us decide, what facilitates effective discernment, right? And so just know, you know, we've heard all of our lives, you know thyself, right? So I've been, you know, talking to my daughters like that since they were three, right? And I've always said to them, like, one of the most important aspects of being a functional, discerning human is to know thyself, you know, to understand what makes you personally, me personally, tick, choose, decide. What makes me, you know, aware of myself first and foremost, my reactions to the world around me. You know, like simple stuff. Like, this is a kind of a crude example, but like when I was in my early teens, I probably walked around for like more than a month with a thorn from a bush embedded in my toe, literally. Okay. And it was painful every day, like every day, painful, to the point where I actually stopped after about a month and a half, stopped what I was doing, sat down, looked at my toe, and saw the thorn like pussing in my toe, trying to expel it, right? Like, it actually formed a barrier around the thorn, like wanting to expel that thorn to the degree like my body was rejecting it. But my brain wasn't really paying attention to it. My body was fully aware of it. And I just kept walking around like that. And once I sat down and saw it, like, it like just popped out. And I was like, well, why wasn't I paying attention to that? I wasn't paying attention to that because I didn't know myself. I didn't know thyself. And I've told that story to my daughters a dozen times. Why? Because, like, our bodies understand, but our brains often aren't recognizing what's happening because we're so distracted with everything else going on in our lives, right? And so when you know thyself, you're paying attention to every aspect of what your body's trying to tell you, at least for me. And in addition to that, you know, we're consciously aware of how our mind might be playing tricks on us and how it processes the world around us. And the more you know yourself, the more, I think, understanding you have over your feelings and your emotions and your mind, right? All that being said, I don't know that we spend a whole lot of energy and effort understanding ourselves to the degree that we could or should. And as a biohacker, I mean, I think that, like, ultimately, that's what you're doing all day, every day. Like, you're really, truly paying attention to every aspect of that, right? And when it comes to others in their input and how we process what they're trying to maybe inform us on that might benefit them ultimately and not necessarily benefit us, that level of discernment, I think, truly begins with knowing yourself and knowing that the basics or the basis of being a trusting being, that psychological and biological instinct to trust others, ultimately is this cognitive gap where biological trust overrides all forms of suspicion, leaving the door wide open for all kinds of fraud and deception. And that biological default to trust ultimately facilitates the psychological shortcuts or the heuristics that criminals, scammers, influencers that don't necessarily have your best interest in mind use to bypass human logic and emotion, right? Think of it as like biological impulse versus intellectual understanding, that internal conflict between our evolved understanding of the world around us, survival instincts, and our modern knowledge of digital risks and scams. The more we understand of the world around us, the more we consume what's right and wrong, motivations of others, I think the better off we're going to be. And to kind of finalize that, we as human beings, we ultimately become what we think about, truly. Like if you're, you know, consuming porn all day long, that's really the direction that your life's going to go. You're just going to become obsessed, right? If you are watching TV all day long and every other commercial is fast food, you're getting in the car and going to Wendy's, you know? If you're consuming information in regards to managing risk, understanding various forms of fraud and scams, things like pig butchering, an influencer's motivation and how they're trying to get one over on you, and so on. Right? If you're consuming healthy information on diet and nutrition, that's what you become eventually, right? That's how it works, right? And so I don't know that it's at all necessary that we become paranoid or overwhelmed or like overly suspicious, right? I think that we just take in information that ultimately benefits us, strengthens our mind and body, that in the end, as you consume this information, you become what you think about. And that good information regarding diet, nutrition, preventing fraud, understanding scams, ultimately just makes you a better person in all aspects of your life.
It's probably a good rule of thumb that when you're being enticed or pressured, even subtly, into some kind of decision, and it's hooking biologically into greed, fear, or lust, that's probably a really, really good sign to put the brakes on whatever that decision is. Because that it's probably those three things that are most used to predate on victims by scammers, right?
Sure. Yeah. Manufactured urgency. And like you said, our primal instincts, you know, our reptilian brain. And they go after that. They understand how that works. You know, for decades, sociologists, psychologists, they understand what motivates us, what makes us choose, what makes us decide. I mean, heck, if you've ever taken a sales course or a negotiation course, what you're learning is how to manipulate other humans, right? And certainly there are, you know, there's forms of ethical manipulation. And of course, you can easily adopt those same ethical principles to become unethical. I think that, like, as a parent, we understand what it means to ethically manipulate our children all the time. I mean, you've got a 2-year-old that won't eat their broccoli. So now you kind of play a game with them to eat their broccoli. You know, you kind of make it like it's an airplane or whatever. You throw a little salt and butter on it, whatever it is that you do to get the kid to eat the broccoli. You're ethically trying to manipulate them in order to consume their greens so they will be that much more healthy, right? But then as we grow older, you know, we take these same sales and negotiation strategies and, you know, depending on the nature of that person, if they are sociopath, psychopath, hardcore narcissists, right? They don't experience empathy, sympathy, guilt, remorse. They truly have no shame. They're predatory in their nature. Unethically manipulating others is their default, really. And they use basic 101 human psychology against us. And they flip it all on their head. And they essentially, you know what they're doing is wrong, but they don't care because they're a sociopath. And those lies they're essentially telling ultimately are designed to convince us. And we fall for this stuff because our default, our human blind spot, facilitates that.
So, okay, let's give people, I bet you got some good stories about wild scams that have been run. Could you maybe share one or two?
Yeah, so I'm the guy that the wealth manager calls when his or her clients are just being bombarded with one fraud after the other via email, phone, you know, text, video, pop-up, in person, inbound communications, right? So the wealth manager calls me, says, listen, my clients are continually clicking links and responding to phone calls and emails. And before you know it, like, they're wiring money to what they think is like a legitimate cryptocurrency investment. Or, you know, what's called a grandparent scam. They think it's their, you know, loved one in distress. And they're sending money via Western Union or crypto for that matter. And ultimately they're losing, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, even 7 figures. Happens all the time. So not too long ago, I got called to speak in Florida. A wealth manager brought me in to speak to his 1,000 clients over the course of 2 days. I did like 4 programs, 250, 250, 250, 250 in the audience over the course of, you know, 48 hours. And because a couple, husband and wife, received an email months earlier. And that email started off with, you know, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on? And the husband's like, I'm sorry, who's this? In response via email. Like, when we get those text messages all the time, similar in nature, right? And the husband responds, and it ended up like he didn't know the person, but got into a dialogue with the person. Because, you know, certain people are just generally friendly and they might be a little bit lonely. And so, like, just responding to that email out of courtesy, he struck up a dialogue. And the dialogue over the course of a couple of weeks turned into, oh, by the way, like, I invest in gold and Forex and cryptocurrency, and I make like, you know, 80% on my investment. If you're ever interested in learning about that, you know, here's a link to click on that can show you how to do it. And the husband, curious, clicked the link, and before you know it, he's consuming information about all that, all the money that could be made on crypto. Well, he dropped $1,000 on his first investment. And within a week, that $1,000 turned into $1,500. And like any Ponzi scheme, documentation is all, you know, fake, right? And most Ponzi schemes, historically, it's usually paper documentation. It's statements that you would receive in the mail, you know? Today, those Ponzi schemes are all digital. It's apps that you download. It's websites that you visit. It's links that you click that show your return on investment like that, you know? And with AI, artificial intelligence, that can create on the fly statements digitally, apps, websites, landing pages that look as legit as they could possibly be because, I mean, with the exception of the information on it being a lie, the layout, the 4 colors and how they interact, like everything about it is as real as you logging into a Fidelity account. You know, it's perfect. Like, everything about it is perfect.
And very soon, AI is going to be capable of generating lifelike, indiscernible from real life, avatars of people that look and sound real that look and sound trustworthy on a VoIP call just like this. That's going to be, if that's not a thing now, very, very soon, that's going to be a thing. Please continue.
Yeah. So very, very soon. And yeah, it kind of really is a thing. So the couple, you know, invests their thousand, turns into 1500, and he could have taken the money out. Like, he actually could have withdrawn those funds and made his $500. Instead, he's like, you know what? This is great. He tells his wife, he's like, hey, honey, look at this. I could take this money out right now. We just made $500. And she's like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, I think we should throw in another thousand. He throws in another thousand. Now he's got, you know, that turns into 3,000. So he's like, you know what? Well, let's drop 10,000. She's like, let's go for it. That 10,000 turns into 15,000. It's like, hell, this is fantastic. You know, and the two of them are in on it together. They start to like liquidate their actual investments from their financial service professional, you know, from their, you know, accounts. And next thing you know, like, they're dropping 100 grand and then 200 grand. And that money is exponentially growing on paper or digitally, right? They see it online via an app. Over the course of 3 months, they refinanced their home. They liquidated all of their investments, you know, all their blue chips. 600 grand turned into 2.2 million over the course of 3 months. When they went to withdraw the money, everybody and all that money just disappeared.
Right. Ouch.
I met the couple. They came up to me at the end of my presentation. You know, and they were like in their mid-70s, fit. They look good, so to speak, you know.
Must have been biohackers. There's lots of those in Florida.
Yeah. They were taking care of themselves. And the wife, when I looked at her, she I could tell she was just broken, like emotionally, like everything about her, just you could just tell she had nothing left. Her eyes were glazed over. She was half in tears. And the husband was still in denial, I could tell. The way he was looking at me, the way he was talking to me, he was like, he literally said the words to me. He's like, so, like, I truly believe in what Mr. Trump is doing. Like, this is what he said to me, okay? Mm-hmm. He said, I truly believe in what Mr. Trump is doing. I can't make this stuff up, right? He's like, what he's doing with the tariffs, sticking it to these countries, I think it's great. He says, the FBI said to me that they think that my money went to Nigeria. And I think that if Mr. Trump was to reach out to the Nigerian government, I think that Mr. Trump could get my money back. And then he says, do you know Mr. Trump? He's like, do you think you could put a good word in for me? And I was like,
sorry, no.
I don't know Mr. Trump. I'm sorry. I wish I did. I wish I could, you know, put a good word in for you, but I don't. I said, but if you keep pursuing everything with the FBI, they may be able to claw that money back. I've seen it happen, you know, but I don't know that that's going to happen. You know, like, I didn't want to like deflate the guy. It is true that the FBI has clawed some money back, but, you know, we've seen hundreds of billions of dollars lost. We've seen a few billion clawed back. So, you know, that said, there are a lot of people out there like this guy and his wife. And I see that happening on a regular basis now. You know, most people are unaware that there is currently a transfer of wealth that is occurring. They call it the greatest transfer of wealth in humankind, in the history of humankind, of about 120 something trillion dollars is being transferred between the baby boomers and the greatest generation to the younger generations, my generation, Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, Gen Z, and so forth, right? Basically, like, our parents and grandparents are transferring the wealth that they accumulated over the course of their lifetime as they perish to the younger generations, their kids, their grandkids. That transfer of wealth is happening right now, and that money is the target of a lot of the fraud that we see today, okay? So that generation, those generations, they are the most moneyed. They are the least technically savvy. They're the most trusting, right? And they are, many of them are lonely, okay? So as a result, as they age, as they decline, cognitively declining as we all are as we age to a degree, right? I mean, to a degree, they are highly susceptible to all these various frauds. And unless we intervene with them, right, and say, hey, before you click that link, download that information, you know, read that data, make that investment, here's what this fraud looks like. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty sad. There's a YouTube channel that my wife and I really enjoy that has just some grade A infotainment on this topic. It's called Social Catfish, and they do these weekly webisode documentaries on people that get romance scammed online. And it... Okay, what strikes me is that there's almost always a significant degree of complicity on behalf of the victims, that a lot of the victims are wildly narcissistic. They have wildly unrealistic expectations, and then they're just willingly blind to the... to the reddest of red flags. But yeah, a combination of lust and loneliness are like these two levers in human psychology that you can just get a lot of leverage out of. For people that might not know about this a whole lot, let's give a concise explanation as to like the form that romance scams usually take. Well, I know there's a couple of different forms, but like what is the typical way that they're run? And then what are the most conspicuous red flags of romance scams?
So I think it's important to define what loneliness actually is, as odd as that sounds. So loneliness is a natural biological trait that all of us instinctually, biologically possess. Everybody possesses loneliness, everybody. But that doesn't mean that we wake up every day experiencing loneliness, okay? But what they say is that as many as 25% of all of humanity wakes up every day, and that is their default, is that they are lonely at some given point in time in their life. 25% of all human beings wake up and navigate the day feeling, they call it the pain and ache of loneliness. Loneliness is equated with hunger pains or thirst, for that matter. So think of it like this. When you are thirsty, your body is saying, whoa, we need fluids to nourish our body. You need to find fluids to consume, ultimately, so you can live another day, so you can procreate. We experience hunger pains, like when we are hungry, which, you know, here in the U.S., we don't generally, like the majority of us don't experience overwhelming hunger pains because there's food everywhere, right? But hunger pains are designed biologically so that you will consume food, you will forage to extinguish those hunger pains so you can live another day, so you can procreate. Well, the pain and the ache of loneliness is there so that you as a human, when you experience that pain and ache of loneliness, will find companionship to ultimately procreate, to further the species. I mean, that's the whole point of thirst, hunger, and loneliness, right? Basically, biologically, to live another day, to procreate. And this loneliness in this day and age, doesn't necessarily suit us the way that it did, say, thousands of years ago. You know, now it just kind of gets in the way of things. It just kind of messes us up. And often it leads to a lot of mental and physical health issues as well. Right. I mean, studies over and over again will show that people who just by default experience loneliness on a regular basis, they are ill more often. They are susceptible to more disease. It just affects them in so many, you know, ways. Criminals have figured out that when 25% of us wake up every day lonely, that they are a highly susceptible target. Because when, for example, one of the scams out there called pig butchering is a brutal, brutal fraud. Pig butchering is when the victim receives often an email, a phone call, but more likely a wrong number text message. Those wrong number text messages that we get are designed to like flesh out who's lonely and who's not, who's going to react and respond, who won't. And when we get those text messages, which I get all the time, and I respond to all of them because I understand what their motivation is and I want to flesh it all out and see where it goes.
Really?
I respond to those. Yeah. All the time. And so when I respond to those text messages, what I often get in response is, oh, I'm sorry. You know, like they say, hey, can we talk for a minute? And I'm like, okay, who's this? And their response is, you're talking to Gloria. Who am I speaking to? And my reaction is, oh, you're talking to Slick Rick. How can I help you? And she's like, hi, Rick. Nice to meet you. I'm Gloria. I'm from Coral Gables, Florida. Where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from, you know, New York. And she's like, oh, that's really nice to hear, Rick. What do you do for a living? And I'm like, oh, I'm a roofer. And she's like, oh, I'm a model. I work in cryptocurrency and gold. Do you invest in cryptocurrency? Like, that's how the conversation begins.
Right away, they jump from the modeling career to the cryptocurrency tease.
Yeah. Yeah, interestingly, like they lay their cards right on the table because here's what they know. Here's what they know. They know that 25% of all of us are just lonely. And they know that if you react and you respond to Gloria just like that, even after they've laid their cards on the table, and you're like all of a sudden engaging in dialogue with Gloria as she's asking you more and more questions. Where are you from? What do you do for work? Do you invest in gold or cryptocurrency? What are you doing today? Do you work out? Are you married? Do you own your own home? Like, what kind of car do you drive? If you're already engaging in these basic one-on-one dialogue, then they know that you're like a perfect candidate for investing tens of thousands of dollars in whatever ruse they have going on. They just know. They're going after the lowest common denominator, humans that don't understand and recognize risk all that effectively. And by default, because where they are in their lives, they are just lonely. And they know that if they maintain that dialogue day after day, and what it looks like is when you're communicating with these pig butcher scammers, you wake up in the morning. Good morning, dear. How did you sleep last night? Is what you wake up to in a text. And then throughout the day, so, Rick, what do you have going on today? And then she says, I am going to yoga this morning, and then I have to do some grocery shopping. I'm probably
going to Starbucks.
Basic stuff, really, like truly, it's just dialogue, you know? And before you know it, like you're communicating with Gloria 6, 8, 10 times a day over the course of a week. What is that? That's like 60, 70, 80 communications throughout the week. So if I go into this dialogue with Gloria and my default is I'm lonely and I'm communicating with Gloria 80 times in the course of a week. Good night, dear. I hope you sleep well. What do you think happens to my loneliness after about 10 days? It dissipates.
Yes, because you have a simulacrum of a relationship there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my focus is no longer how lonely I am. Gloria has extinguished my loneliness. Gloria has put that pain and ache of loneliness out of my body. She's put the fire out. And now my focus is her, opposed to my pain and ache of loneliness. My focus is now Gloria. Gloria's handlers, those who instruct Gloria of what to do, understand this. Gloria is the pawn in a game, but she's being directed and controlled by organized criminals that truly understand how this works. And so after 10 days, Gloria's like, you know, Rick, like, I understand you're a roofer, and I know that, like, that's hard work. Because on Gloria's end, like, they know what roofing is. They know, like, you're working on a roof all day long. You're in the cold. You're in the heat. It's dangerous. They know it's, like, a relatively low-paying profession. You're getting minimum wage to $25-$30 an hour as an employee. And that, like, there's a high rate of, like, you know, alcoholism and drug abuse amongst blue-collar workers. Like, they know all that stuff. And so with all of that...
But here in maybe about a half decade, those blue-collar workers are going to be doing a lot better than a lot of us who are going to be replaced by AI in our information-based digital jobs. So yeah. So maybe we shouldn't feel so sorry for them. In the near future, they're going to be doing pretty well.
Well, there's no question about that. They are what keeps the motor running in the U.S. There's no question about that. But you know, many that are essentially, you know, working hard jobs, you know, there's some vulnerability there in regards to their consumption of drugs and alcohol. I mean, that's just the reality of it. All that being said, the point of that is that the scammers are doing their research. And so they're interjecting their research into the dialogue, you know. And so after 10 days of you no longer being lonely, she says, listen, I can, you know, help you make, you know, 80% on your paycheck if you just let me walk you through the process. And I say to Gloria, you know what, Gloria? Yeah, let's do it. Like, show me how this works. This is what I see next. She sends me a screenshot of her phone. And she shows me a screenshot of her Coinbase app and her crypto.com app, right? And she says, download these two apps from the either the Google Play or the Apple's iTunes store, right? And so I send her a screenshot that I've downloaded these two apps. And next thing you know, she sends me another screenshot of logging in and how to set up an account. And step by step, we go back and forth regarding screenshots, and she's showing me how to set up the account, connect my bank account, connect my credit cards. And before you know it, like, I'm making an investment of $10. And she says, great, here's what you want to do next. And she says, listen, if you want, at any given point in time, I can manage your account for you. So that she can actually, because she's the talent in this game, and she can show me how to make 80% on my money. And down the road, as Gloria is handling my account, all I've got to do is log in to, you know, a link that she provides me that shows me my returns on investment. Because I'm on a roof all day long. I'm busy. I'm working 8, 10, 12 hours a day. And so she's handling it for me. And I trust Gloria now. And as time progresses and as my money is growing, she's becoming a bit more flirtatious with me. She's a little bit lighter. Her photos are a little bit more risque. Like, she's really luring me in. And these scams are making tens of billions of dollars every single year. And after months and months and months of this, as I'm investing everything, she's like, you know, I think that we should really get to know each other. Let's get on a WhatsApp. And I get on the WhatsApp video call with Gloria. And Jonathan, what I find is that I'm actually talking to another human on WhatsApp video, and obviously another human,
mm-hmm.
using the photo that she provided me, right, initially, right? But it's AI face overlay.
Hmm.
It's of, like, the photo is of, like, a white Russian model. But who I'm actually talking to is a young Southeast Asian female based on her accent.
Yeah, and it's kind of it's kind of a good reason to learn accents a little bit more. Because it's like I see on The Social Catfish, I'm amazed at how night people, there'll be a distinctly African accent and the victim believes that they're like Dutch or something with a distinctly, or yeah, they'll say like, oh, this is Susie from Wisconsin. And she has, yeah, and she has like a South Asian accent with broken English. It's kind of a good reason to learn accents a little bit better.
And people who aren't all that worldly, right? People who grow up in a certain town, you know, they went to school in a certain town, they got a job in a certain town, they've really never left that town or that state. They may not really have all that much information in regards to those accents and dialects. And sure. So that does not seem like a red flag to them, right? And as a result, that person who isn't as worldly is the perfect candidate for these types of scams and frauds, you know? And I when I get on that WhatsApp video and I'm looking at this human that I can tell based on the facial expressions, the eyes are blinking, the mouth is moving, but there's not a whole lot of contortion in the face. That is the AI face overlay. And as we're having this dialogue and I'm listening to this Southeast Asian accent, I just know that this is, you know, I mean, I knew from the very beginning it was a fraud, it was a scam. But based on like the type of dialogue we're having, the whole point of this interaction is that she wants, or her scammers want, her organized crime bosses want this interaction we're having via video to basically like be the nail in the coffin. Because now she's going to ask me to start, hey, like you're making so much money right now. You really want to think about like doubling your investments because I can make you a ton more money. And once you do, now you're borrowing money from friends and family, and they know this. You're getting you're refinancing your home and taking those investments, and they know this. And before you know it, like, you know, you want to withdraw that money, they all vanish and they all disappear.
And they probably then put you on like a suckers list where another attractive JPEG is going to be contacting you a couple months later.
As a matter of fact, the next phone call you get is from someone who can help you recover your money. And if you pay more money to help them recover what you lost on the scam, that's the next step of the scam.
It's now the stereotype is like the older lonely guy who thinks that there's some attractive young woman that's into him. That's the stereotype of this. But what I've seen is that it's just as common with women. It's okay. Actually, it seems like younger women are a bit less of a victim of this. Okay, you would think that younger people in general would be more internet savvy and would be victims of this less. But there's actually a lot of youngish men in their 30s, late 20s that fall victim to this. And then there's a lot of middle-aged women. I would say, but just based upon this show that I love, Social Catfish, it's probably about 50-50. Men, women, older, a bit older men, women that are victims of this. And then also the LGBTQ crowd is not immune to this. There's scammers out there posing as bait for them. And okay, so I'll let you respond to that.
So statistically, men are actually more vulnerable. More men get hooked up in these scams than women do, but women actually lose more money. So more men get hooked up in these scams, but women actually suffer higher losses. Okay. Age-wise, it's across the board. I would say that those in their 40s to as much as their 70s and even 80s are all like the primary victims in the majority of these scams because of their wealth, because they have that much more money in the bank. Those in their 20s and 30s are often the ones that get caught in the sextortion scams, where the male, in many situations, thinks he's communicating with an attractive young female and provides a picture of himself, full frontal nudity, that he provides to a scammer. And that scammer is now connected to his Instagram, Facebook, Snap, whatever the case is, and threatens that young male to expose that photo to everybody that he's connected to. And so that's those sextortion scams, and even including the pig butchering scams, sometimes lead to even suicide. So it's important that you recognize what's happening to you biologically, psychologically, once you start engaging in somebody virtually, and what the motivation in the end beyond love and relationships might be. Because sextortion, pig butchering, these romance scams are brutal. They essentially facilitate throwing common sense out the window. And our emotions eclipse our common sense.
Okay, I've got a passage from one of my books, and then I've got a question for you at the end of this. I wrote a book for men, a guide to dating, seduction, and courtship in modernity. It's called Don't Stick Your Dick in a Blender, How to Meet a Nice Girl Instead, from a Tantric Husband with a Better Sex Life Than You. And thank you. In this book, I did a really, this was a while back before romance scams were quite so well known. I did really thorough research on the pitfalls of online dating. And here's what I wrote in the chapter. In my research of romance scams, watching multitudes of YouTube videos with naive guys, sad stories, You know what I didn't come across? A guy who got scammed by a woman he met in the real world. A guy who boldly cold approached a hottie in the vegetable aisle of his organic grocery store. They had a relationship, and then she scammed him out of $10,000, somehow without even kissing him once. I'm sure it has happened, but it's extremely rare compared with the prevalence of online romance scams. Why do you rob a bank? Because that's where the money is, right? These cold-hearted, greedy romance scammers fish for victims in the online dating pool because they know that's where the suckers are. That's where the desperate losers and dummies are. That's where the inassertive chumps are to be found. If that's not the kind of guy you are or aspire to be, is online dating really for you? So my question for you, Robert, is this. Are there any common scams that people really need to worry about that don't happen online? Would like a really simple way to avoid scams and predators be simply don't do any serious dealings with people that you meet online?
So I have been presenting security awareness training for 30 plus years. This is what I do for a living. So I get in front of live audiences and I talk about managing risk. I talk about, you know, understanding how to avoid and remove yourself from a potentially dangerous situation in both the physical and virtual worlds, right? So obviously, it's those sociopaths and psychopaths, those hardcore narcissists that are the ones that are perpetrating these, you know, various frauds and physical crimes, okay? And in order to be able to effectively recognize risk, like we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, is to first and foremost, know thyself, understanding your own human blind spot and your default to trust. And then from there, recognizing risk means truly becoming what I call a methodology that I've developed over this past 30 years, a strategic human firewall. So a strategic human firewall truly is a human that is, you know, well thought out, a thinking man or thinking woman, that you're looking at every aspect of every inbound phone call, email, text message, pop-up, video, whatever, abstractly. You're looking at, okay, what is the motivation of this person on the other end? Do they have good intentions or do they mean to do me harm? Like that literally needs to be part of your thought process. As you become that is the strategic part of being a human firewall, okay? So you're thinking things through. You're not just emotionally reacting and responding. You're analytically looking at, okay, what is really, truly going on here? And I don't know that a majority of people do that. I don't know that most of us are actually seeking out the flaw in that inbound communication. So a strategic human firewall is a human that basically becomes the ultimate defense against deception. It is truly becoming a proactive human that recognizes a governance, a mindset that transforms us from truly what we are, our passive targets. We are passive targets, most of us, because we're not strategically thinking things through. We're just passively engaging. So we go from passive targets into active detection layers, like we're looking for the vulnerability. We're looking for the fraud. We're looking for the scam. It marks a fundamental shift from I automatically trust what I see to I verify everything, which is what I hope to achieve with everybody in my audience when I'm doing a live presentation. Most security awareness training is like a monologue. It's like it's a presenter, either in like a YouTube video or an e-learning or even on stage, talking at the audience rather than with them. You know, the idea behind becoming a strategic human firewall is that you acknowledge that you're vulnerable. You acknowledge that you're flawed, that you trust by default. You acknowledge that I can, in fact, be scammed, that I am vulnerable like I am. Because I'm human. You know, I want to believe people. I'm interdependent. I need people. I can experience loneliness. Once you acknowledge that, you acknowledge that they say that is, and you could do your own research here, as many as 3% of women and as much as 6% of men worldwide are predatory in their nature. These are what the medical communities would consider sociopaths and psychopaths. Again, hardcore narcissists that don't experience empathy, sympathy, guilt, or remorse. They truly have no shame. And they are the lions and or the wolves amongst us. And so when you understand the basics of that, it's not something that you worry about. It's something that you just do something about. So going forward, once you recognize, that's what's going on out there. Oh, so all I really need to do is just pay a bit more attention, just recognize risk, like with those inbound communications, when I'm on a dating site, even though I'm a bit lonely, I still do need to recognize that not everybody has my best intent. Not everybody has my best interest in mind, like that some people are essentially vampires and they're going to suck the blood or suck the life out of me or suck the money out of my bank account. Oh, that's a real thing. I need to be cognizant of that. And so in the real world, does that happen? Sure. All the time. In the virtual world, with AI and deep fakes and voice cloning, AI has truly made all of the clumsy red flags of traditional fraud. It's gone away. You know, in the past, criminals relied on what we would call, you know, blunder force phishing, mass blasting text messages and emails with scammer grammar. Today, AI allows for high precision impersonation at scale. It's amazing what it's capable of.
I surmise that the next frontier of this is going to be, okay, it's going to be YouTube channels with some guru. Like, you can imagine, there'll be some attractive woman who makes YouTube vlogs talking about trading crypto, who looks very real. And this is just a little bit of a ways away with generative AI. YouTube vlogger, not like a faceless channel, but just like a normal vlogger talking about investment things. And she'll just pepper in her content from time to time, if you want to learn more about this, drop me a comment or shoot me a message on Instagram. And then people are going to get into that parasocial relationship with some influencer that they see on YouTube, that they're like, okay, this is a real person on YouTube and attractive, so I'm kind of interested in getting in touch with them. And then, Phil, I predict that's going to be the next wave of this.
So what's brilliant about what you just said is a perfect example of what being a strategic human firewall is. So, Jonathan, you just demonstrated a strategic human firewall. So based on your life experience, what you've seen, what you've consumed, what you've read up on, you've become that because of your effort into it. We become what we think about. And when people consume, say, this podcast, we are becoming a strategic human firewall based on the information we are consuming, so that going forward, we don't worry about these things, but we do something about it. We're recognizing risk on purpose. It becomes a part of our, you know, DNA going forward, right? Which is really all this takes, is just to make an effort to do it. Opposed to, oh, well, why would they scam me? You know, I don't really have all that much. Why would they scam my identity? Why would they, you know, steal my, you know, credit card information? Like, what do I have to offer? I don't even have good credit. Like, instead of like giving up all kinds of excuses, functioning in denial, you know, utilizing what we call fatalism. Oh, yeah, why would they, you know, attack me? Like, you know, by consciously acknowledging and recognizing risk, you are becoming a strategic human firewall. And that's a relatively easy thing to do once you flip that switch and make an effort to do so.
Okay, let's talk some more about deception detection. So there's a pretty good TV show on this. It's a bit old, but it's actually a really good TV show worth watching all three seasons. That's Lie to Me. And it's about a fictional deception detection consultancy but it's based upon, I forget the name of the real life doctor. Do you remember his name?
I don't.
Okay. It's based upon the work of the study of like micro expressions, because all 8 billion of us have these inevitable physiological tells when we are lying. And if you watch this TV show, you'll start to learn quite a few of them. Like, you're talking to someone and they cover their mouth real quick. Okay, that is not a for sure sign that they're lying, but it's a little bit of a red flag. You're talking to someone and they touch under their collar a little bit. That's a sign of some nervousness. Someone scratch the back of their neck, touching behind the ears a little bit. These are all like signs that people lie. And once you watch that TV show, you start noticing these sorts of things. I bet you could tell us a few more red flags of lies.
Yeah, so we're talking about, you know, recognizing the telltale signs of deception with body language. I believe that show that you're speaking of was actually a Fox network show. That said, you know, body language experts will tell you all day long that all these telltale signs are, you know, the scientifically you can essentially determine what's real and what's fake. Okay? When somebody means to do you harm, when they're truly deceiving you, they will say and do things that we react to one way or the other. So let me give you a quick example. So if you come in contact with somebody in the physical world and that human being makes you feel good, no red flags pop up, you just feel generally comfortable around them, one of two things are going on. Either A, they're being truthful, or B, they're a complete sociopath and psychopath in your body, and they understand that the certain aspects of body language that telltale signs that you may pick up on, and they may have actually like studied that so that they can convince you that they are worthy of your trust. Otherwise, if somebody is lying to you, the way that their mouth contorts, the way that their eyes dart up to the right or the left, the way their body language functions in our presence, there may be telltale signs that they are lying that we may not necessarily understand that they are lying. But what our intuition tells us is, whoa, something isn't right here. Because if all day, every day, you're interacting with people that are telling you the truth, and then all of a sudden, you're confronted by somebody who is lying to you, there's something about their body language that you don't necessarily scientifically understand, but what your experience is telling you is that there's something going on here that like is not like everybody else. There's something about their body language that is offensive to me, but you can't really put your finger on it because you don't necessarily understand the science behind body language. And that's when your intuition kicks in. And your intuition is going, whoa, something is wrong here. And here's the thing with that. You don't necessarily need to understand the scratching behind the head, the covering up of the mouth, the contortion of the face. You don't necessarily need to understand that. What you do need to recognize is that when your body is telling you something is wrong, something is wrong. And every single person who I have ever interviewed who has become a victim of a crime has said to me 100 times over, I knew something was wrong before it happened, but they didn't do anything about it because they didn't want to believe that they were in the presence of somebody who is evil. They didn't want to think that the person that they were with was lying to them. I spend a lot of my business working with real estate agents who are murdered in the U.S., and these are murdered. Real estate agents are murdered in the U.S. That's a real thing. You know, these are men and women that don't actually have any, you know, formal self-defense training that are meeting complete strangers in vacant properties. And so bad things sometimes happen. And as a result, like you have a real estate agent that's working with a client, and before you know it, like they're in the basement of a home and they're attacked. And in situations where like that real estate agent is working with this client that we know, like based on stories of their family, where they're ultimately murdered and their family says, well, the problem with my mom is that she was like a very trusting person. And it's like, well, actually, we're all very trusting people. I think what really happens is in that interaction, when she was working with this potential client, that she knew at some point something is wrong. But what happened was she went further down the rabbit hole because when she knew something was wrong, her body was telling her, you know what? Something's not right here. But what she did was her mind said, you know what? He's just an odd duck. This guy that I'm interacting with right now, who's in my presence, as uncomfortable as I feel, he's just an odd duck. And she denied her own body's reaction to what was happening to her, in as a result, went further down the rabbit hole and into the basement and was murdered. We deny that we're in the presence of evil. We know something is wrong. We don't trust our own body language. We don't trust our own body's intuition because we don't want to believe that we are in the presence of evil. And I say to people, the best thing to do is stop what you're doing and don't deny what your body's telling you. Do something about it, even if it means you being rude. In that situation, that real estate agent, instead of like maybe stopping the appointment abruptly and saying, you know what? I'm sorry. I just got a phone call. My kid's at school and he just got into a situation. I got to go, and canceling the appointment. They go further into it because they don't want to be rude. And criminals know that that's how we would react.
I've got kind of a good story about listening to that discomfort sign in the body. When I was about 19 years old, me and my buddies went out to this crazy club in Denver, and we're pretty wasted, and we meet these two Mexican chicks wearing almost nothing, and we're all dancing and having a good time, and then the girls are like, hey, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to a different party. And so we're 19-year-olds wasted in a club. So we're like, vamos, yeah, let's do it. And so we start walking, and one of them is holding my hand. She was holding my hand very firmly. And they were leading us somewhere. And a bunch of cars are like metaphorically barking, honking at them because they're like wearing mini skirts as they're leading us someplace. And I just get this sense. I tell my buddies, hey guys, this is weird. If we want to go someplace with them, let's just take them there in our car. Cause one of us had driven, let's just drive wherever they want to go. Let's not walk where they're leading us. And so we tell them, no, come to our car. And so they're like, okay. And so we get in the car, and then one of them starts giving my buddy a blowjob, and then we find out that they're trannies.
Dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was something as we were walking, like I'm just a dumb 19-year-old. Like I was a virgin. I thought I was about to get lucky. But there was something about the way he was holding my hand. I was like, this isn't quite right. We don't even know their names. We should not be following them downtown at 2 a.m.
Yeah. So that life experience is something that we're supposed to learn from, which I'm sure you have.
A bit, yeah.
Which is one more like iron in the fire to provide life experience to become a strategic human firewall. Your buddy, on the other hand, he definitely learned something. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know.
I think that was probably the last time that happened to him. So, okay, as we're drawing towards our conclusion here, I don't usually you're working with like big corporations and wealth managers, but for our audience that's interested in personal growth kind of stuff, you contributed to this book that's entitled One Habit, 100 Habits of the World's Happiest Achievers. Tell us a bit about what you contributed to that book for people who might be interested in it.
Yeah. So like I am a person that, you know, utilizes aphorisms on a regular basis to kind of, you know, train my brain to think good things and recognize, you know, is what I am doing, is what I am currently doing right now taking me closer to or further away from my goals. You know, I'm a person that understands we become what we think about. And I require daily aphorisms to keep my brain orderly. I'm someone that only 4 or 5 years ago, as a result of COVID, was diagnosed ADHD. And I don't know that I necessarily believe that ADHD is, and I personally don't necessarily believe that that is a true medical issue as a result of a diagnosis. I just think that that's natural and normal that some people are that characteristic and others aren't. Like, I think that many of us are either farmers or hunters. And I just think I'm a hunter. And I think that's what ultimately ADHD is. But that's, thousands of years of evolution versus a, deficiency. It just in modern society, it may not necessarily work in like a classroom where 25 people are supposed to look at one person for 8 hours a day and pay attention. That never worked for me. All that being said, my chapter was about these aphorisms and ultimately what it is that we need to do to program ourselves in order to function in a modern society. And it has allowed me, these various aphorisms that I use that I have adopted over the course of my lifetime, to stay orderly. These habits that I've developed to keep my ADHD brain on track. Otherwise, I would flail. Otherwise, I'd be just moving from one thing to another. Otherwise, I would be out of routine. And it is these various routines that I've developed as a result of knowing that I need this order that have allowed me to be what I would consider a successful human. And that means, I've been married for 25 years. I've raised two pretty productive young humans, females, children, that are, doing very well in their own lives. But without these aphorisms, without this structure and this routine, I would just be, messy, which I'm still here and there messy because I'm human. But all that said, my chapter was all about that structure and that routine as a result of these various aphorisms that I use to keep me on track.
Do you have any interesting, morning rituals, routine?
Yeah, so for me, it's usually getting up by my body clock, which is great. I have a life that affords that. I do often get on planes and, that means airports relatively early in the morning, which does require an alarm clock. But I would say a good, 60 to 70% of my life, I get up by my body clock. And that means, getting 7.5 hours of sleep, which means going to bed at a certain time, waking up at a certain time based on my body clock. And then from there, for me, and not everybody would agree with this, it's coffee first thing in the morning. And the coffee isn't necessarily, wake me up. It's more so just to get my brain in order, because as an ADHD person, that stimulant aligns me first thing in the morning. It's a known thing that caffeine stimulates the ADHD person in an orderly fashion. And then it gets me, physiologically and biologically moving in the right direction. And then from there, I'm consuming good information first thing in the morning that facilitates right-minded. I don't doom scroll, because that's not good for somebody like me, because somebody like me, that doom scrolling will hamper my thought process, and I will recycle
dramatically hamper it
dramatically. I will recycle bad things all day long. That's just how my brain works. Unfortunately, that's the side effect of being ADHD. But if I'm consuming good information first thing in the morning, that's what recycles, which is great. So from there, my routine often is first thing in the morning, abs. I work out my, core. And then later on in the day, I get my work done, my most creative stuff first thing in the morning. I know that about myself. And then, as the afternoon progresses, it's usually light workouts to keep my body flowing, to get the blood flowing in the right directions. And then later on in the day, as the day tails, you know, towards like after dinner, that's when like working out heavy for me is a good thing. And then my brain kind of starts to fail in regards to creativity, anything else for that matter, research for that matter, after 6-7 o'clock at night. So that's when I begin to entertain myself. And that generally is, you know, good film. Movies that stimulate me, that bring me back, period pieces that often educate me, as you know, to real life, true, you know, whatever stories that allow me to grow as a result of somebody else's experience. That's generally my routine. And throughout the day, I'm dispersing hugs and saying nice things to my loved ones.
Okay, you have got a number of presentations on your website. I'm wondering if there's one presentation that we could like embed in the show notes of this, which you think would be most actionable for the personal growth crowd.
Yeah. So on my website, which is protectnowllc.com, there is a link which says strategic keynotes. And I would say from there, AI strategic human firewall. Really, you know, from there, I would connect with me on LinkedIn. Why? Because I give it all away on LinkedIn in my biweekly newsletter that I put out. And then from there, like, it's about rewiring your brain from, you know, I trust by default to I verify everything. So going forward, every inbound communication, you are discerning what is the motivation of the person on the other end here via that phone call, email, you know, text message, video and such. And what do I need to be and who do I need to become to make sure that then I'm not going to be taken advantage of? And that the AI strategic human firewall and connecting with me on LinkedIn is probably your best bet.
Okay, so as a listener takeaway, I would say this is to try to just be more attentive to those little telltale signs of physiological discomfort when you're interacting with people. They don't always mean that you're dealing with a psychopathic scammer. Sometimes it might just be because your leg is just sore that day or whatever. But yeah, try to be just a bit more attentive to those physiological, this week, next week, when you're going out interacting with people, just pay a little bit more attention to what your body is doing as you're talking to people. And this is kind of a point where you can be non-judgmental of your own thoughts. Is if you get a little bit of bad energy from someone, that's a thing where you don't have to act on that right away. You don't have to say, oh, this is an awful person, I'm going to discontinue this conversation. You can just say, that's something that I noticed, and I'm going to verify before I trust. I think that's probably a pretty good action item for the listeners. That might result in not getting a blowjob from a tranny.
Which brings me to the point where, to follow up on that, and it's not just when something feels wrong, it's when it feels right too. We always, when someone or something is making you feel really good, you also still need to be paying attention.
Mm.
Even though it feels great, that doesn't necessarily mean that person still has good intentions. Their goal is to make you feel great, okay? So even when you feel good, you still have to pay attention to what is the motivation of this person, and is this in fact good for me, or what is really happening here?
I'm Jonathan Rosand with Limitless Mindset, looking forward to a continued conversation with you. We'll be right back.
me to introduce my highly antisocial state of mind. A textbook sociopath, a narcissist of a rarer kind. I live inside a parallel sphere, a universe apart from yours, where self-knowledge prevails and I'm hunting for the open doors. A clinical psychopath, mapping out the human chessboard floor. But my grand ambitions keep on hitting a locked and bolted door. I view humanity as nothing but a golden mark to bleed. Too bad your logic stands directly in the way of what I need. But every scheme I launch just hits a solid brick wall, a human firewall that causes all my structures to fall. I trade in illusions, I spin a magnificent lie, but your critical thinking just watches my profit margins die. I set up a romance profile posing as a handsome, wealthy catch. Exchanging a few sweet messages looking for a perfect match. I spun a tragic tale preparing for the financial ask. But the target stopped me cold, demanding that I drop the mask. Let's do a video call, she said, to verify that you are real. Before I could even deploy my highly practiced, charming spiel. My pick butchering crypto play met a similar sudden end when the mark declared I don't send money to a stranger online, my friend. They told me the promised ROI was too good to be true and left me stranded with a script I could no longer use. I pivoted to retail, buying cheap bottles from a factory in China. White-labeled shoddy supplements, thinking nothing could be finer. $4 a pop to manufacture a useless, dusty blend. And I put them up on Amazon, marked up to $47.99 to spend. I thought the desperate masses would buy the pseudoscience hook. But the savvy consumers didn't even check my promotional book. They demanded to see a clean certificate of analysis first, refusing to swallow the pills to satisfy their supplement thirst. They wanted chromatography and a lab report that was pure, leaving my garage full of inventory with no available cure. But every scheme I launch just hits a solid brick wall, a human firewall that causes all my structures to fall. I trade in illusions, I spin a magnificent lie, but your critical thinking just watches my profit margins die. So I put on a flashy suit and became a crypto influencer supreme, ready to pump and dump a coin and live the digital dream. I screamed about the moon, the Lambos, and the sudden wealth, but the audience I targeted possessed a terrifying mental health. They checked the public blockchain, audited the smart contract code, investigated my reputation, and chose a much safer road. They laughed at my rug pull, ignored my frantic, greedy shout, and decided to huddle their BTC while leaving my token out. My nefariously designed operations are completely in reverse, because common sense is a terrible plague to a grifter's private purse. But every scheme I launch just hits a solid brick wall, a human firewall that causes all my structures to fall. I trade in illusions, I spin a magnificent lie, but your critical thinking just watches my profit margins die. I live in a very, very different world from you, dear listener. So harden your human firewall and edify yourself at Limitless Mindset.